welcome to the show,
Hi,
Adam.
Hi, Julia.
So thanks for your time.
Thanks for having me.
What is it that drew you to Bennelong's life?
Oh, I was studying diplomacy over in the United Kingdom. I had a sabbatical. I was working for a politician, and I needed a break, so I did a degree over in the UK, and a degree in diplomacy. And one of my fellow students was a chap who was the leader of the Free East Timor movement, and together we were two Aussies in the UK, so far from home. But it took us, 24 hours to fly from Sydney over there, and we got to become great mates over there, and we were thinking that, back in his day, Bennelong, who is the first foreign envoy of Australia, regardless of his Aboriginality, he's not Australia's first Aboriginal diplomat. He is our first, our continent's first foreign envoy, full stop. He sailed over there in 1792 with another Wongal man by the name of Yeramawani. They stayed at the home of William Waterhouse. So the Waterhouse name is very well known to Australians. Gay Waterhouse, the horse trainer, and her husband Robbie Waterhouse, from whom she gets the Waterhouse name, is a direct descendant of Henry Waterhouse, who was Arthur Phillips' aide. And of course, there's the whole history of Bennelong being caught up in the early colonial era. King George III gave the governor of New South Wales, Arthur Phillip, his marching orders, and he was told to open dialogue with the natives and live in amity with them. Arthur Phillip interprets that, of course, as instead of him learning the Sydney language, the Aboriginal language, he instead decides to abduct some Aboriginal people so that they can be forced to learn English, which is typical of the British mindset of the day. But all of that history the spearing that happened over in Manly, and then that led to a rapprochement and eventually a friendship between the two. The end result of which was Arthur Phillip invites Bennelong and Yeramawani over to London. They stay with the father of Arthur Phillip's aide, so William Waterhouse. The iconic portrait that we have of Bennelong in profile, with the ruffled shirt, and if you look down the bottom of that that portrait, you see the initials WW. That stands for William Waterhouse. So Bennelong stayed with the Waterhouse family, and all these generations down the line, that family is still involved here in Sydney. But no. Abel Gutierrez, who's was the leader of the East Timor movement, the Free East Timor movement. He's now the ambassador for East Timor here in Australia, the longest serving one. He's the dean of the diplomatic corps. But he and I are both passionate diplomats. I've worked in foreign policy for a long time. And Abel's he's forgotten more than I'll ever learn about foreign policy and doing it the hard way. He's a legend. We both revere Bennelong. He's somebody who has sacrificed so much, and he's to say that he's misunderstood by Australians today. It's fair to say he was equally misunderstood by his own people. He was an extraordinarily intelligent, forgiving, and brave individual.
Right. So, what was the purpose of abducting? You said before Bennelong, was it to? So it was to learn the ways, but also kind of ingratiate him into English culture.
Yes, it changed over time. Originally, Arthur Phillip was doing it. So that, well, Arthur Phillip originally had one man, Arabanu, abducted. People who know Sydney well, if you go down to the corner of Phillip and Bridge Street in Sydney, there's the Sydney Museum. That was once the site of the original government house. So the first fleet landed in January 1788. That was one of the first buildings that was built here in Sydney. Within a few months, Arthur Phillip, who tried several times to go out and speak with Aboriginal people, they avoided him like the plague, and I use that term intentionally. Shortly after their arrival, the smallpox began, and it wiped through the community. A lot of people know that iconic painting of Arthur Phillip hoisting the petard, the Union Jack, with a scene with Aboriginal people loitering around. That didn't happen. It wasn't until 3 days later that they stumbled across some Aboriginal people up at the Domain. That's where the first contact actually happened. But smallpox wiped out half the estimated 8,000 Eora in the greater Sydney region. So Eora is the common language group. We call it a nation, but everywhere from here right up just past Parramatta and up into Gurindji country, where a different language is spoken. 8,000 Aboriginal people lived here, and they were decimated five times over. 50% were wiped out during that time. So, of course, that happened to Arabanu, the first translator, and he was buried in Arthur Phillip's then front yard, which is where years later Barangaroo's ashes would be scattered. There's no plaque there on that site today to commemorate that. Sydney's so full of very rich history, and unless you engage with Aboriginal people, I've been very fortunate to have been given some history lessons by a mutual friend that your producer, Fabian Veron, and I have a very good mate in Jodie Orcher. She was interviewed previously here about Bush Tucker, a great interview. She's given me some excellent history lessons and things that growing up I had no idea about. We have a very rich history.
And is that what the Bennelong Putney Project is aiming to achieve, I guess, is kind of reviving that legacy of Bennelong and teaching people, you know, of Australia's history?
Indeed, yes. The Bennelong is much maligned. There's a great Macquarie University academic by the name of Dr. Peter Mitchell. I was driving back from Blues Fest up in Byron Bay in 2012, and I heard a great late-night radio interview that he gave, talking about all the main arterial routes, all the main roads here around Sydney and surrounds, and saying he explained that they were always Aboriginal walking tracks, but towards the end of that interview, he said that that the year before he had discovered Bennelong's grave. And Bennelong was somebody who was buried in 1813, so this is a very, very old grave. And he told the story of Bennelong's friendship with James Squire, and it seemed such a fanciful story. And I thought to myself, it's so odd that as an Australian, it's nothing that I had heard before. For example, people know the name Flinders, Bass and Flinders, the explorers. I had no idea that George Bass was also a surgeon, the fourth colonial surgeon here in New South Wales. And that he came out to Australia on a boat that was the same boat that brought Bennelong back from London. And during that voyage, Bennelong taught George Bass his language, so that when Bass stepped ashore here on Gadigal land, he was fluent in the Sydney Aboriginal language. That's a remarkable thing, and it's nothing that I had ever heard before. This project is something that gives us the opportunity not only and it's a rare gift finding such an old grave, but I heard that interview and I thought, they're going to do something remarkable there with that gravesite, and I waited many, many years, and I thought maybe something had happened and I missed it on the news or whatever, but no, nothing had happened, and I went back to politics after Oxford, and the thought to me that the federal government could spend $50 million on yet another James Cook monument down at Botany Bay, and yet Bennelong's body lay in an unmarked grave beneath pedestrian traffic in Putney. The symbolism of that was just appalling. So I resolved then and there to help Dr. Mitchell get the funding and the attention it deserves. He and I approached Jody Orcher, who approached the Gadigal elders of Sydney, Uncle Ray, Uncle Alan, Uncle Chicka. Together we approached Peter King, the former member for Wentworth. He was made the, I think Malcolm Turnbull, to get rid of him, he was made the head of UNESCO's World Heritage Committee in Paris.
Wow.
But that gives him global heritage cred. Mm. He agreed to be the chairman of the Bennelong Putney Project. And together we formed a committee that has six Aboriginal people and six non-Aboriginal people, a really good bipartisan committee. It has a Labor mayor, a Greens deputy mayor, the federal member for Bennelong, the state member for Lane Cove, all different political parties. Mm. But the important thing is it is strictly balanced in a cultural sense. So we've got equal numbers of, and importantly, they're Gadigal people.
I was going to say, yeah, just having that representation on the board is something for sure. And it's fantastic you're reviving all these, you know, buried narratives that we just don't hear. And there's so much Indigenous history that we just aren't aware of, hasn't been published. So this is a fantastic initiative. And just lastly, I guess, how can people get involved or find out more about it?
Well, there's a Facebook page, www.facebook.com/Bennelong Putney Project. Last year, we held a smoking ceremony for Bennelong over in Putney. We'll be doing some fundraising throughout the year. The main goal for us this year, last year we convinced Gladys Berejiklian to buy the property on behalf of the people of New South Wales. She took her time doing that, but it was the due diligence that was required. A lot of work went into proving that the gravesite that we have over there is the gravesite of Bennelong. And it's only because he's buried with his third wife Burong and his protege Nanbury that we're able to prove that. People should just keep track of what we're doing via the Facebook page. This year, what we're doing mainly as a committee is deciding how that property is now to be renovated and developed into a fitting museum for Bennelong. Although we've got a good cross-section of people who are representatives of their communities, at the same time we're very open to input from the community. If people have any ideas or suggestions, we're very much open to taking those.
Perfect. Well, Adam, thank you very much for your time this morning. It's
Thanks,
been a pleasure talking to you.